Bad little boys who'd lazed around on the beach instead of attending to their lessons. She hadn't said that birds were bad little boys who'd gone too close to the cliff edge, and in any case jellyfish would be more likely, but Ponder couldn't help thinking that, harmlessly insane though the woman had been, she might have had just the glimmerings of a point. He was spending most nights now watching Hex trawl the invisible writings for any hints. In theory, because of the nature of L's space, absolutely everything was available to him, but that only meant that it was more or less impossible to find whatever it was you were looking for, which is the purpose of computers. Ponder Stibbons was one of those unfortunate people cursed with the belief that if only he found out enough things about the universe, it would all somehow make sense. The goal is the theory of everything. But Ponder would settle for the theory of something, and late at night, when Hex appeared to be sulking, he despaired of even a theory of anything. And it might have surprised Ponder to learn that the senior wizards had come to approve of Hex, despite all the comments on the lines of, "In my day, we used to do our own thinking." Wizardry was traditionally competitive, and while UU was currently going through an extended period of peace and quiet, with none of the informal murders that had once made it such a terminally exciting place, a senior wizard always distrusted a young man who was going places, since traditionally his route might be via your jugular. Therefore, there's something comforting in knowing that some of the best brains in the university, who a generation ago would be coming up with some really exciting plans involving trick floorboards and exploding wallpaper, were spending all night in the high-energy magic building trying to teach Hex to sing Lydia the Tattooed Lady, exulting at getting a machine to do, after 6 hours' work, something that any human off the street would do for tuppence, then sending out for banana and sushi pizza and falling asleep at the keyboard. Their seniors called it technomancy and slept a little easier in their beds in the knowledge that Ponder and his students weren't sleeping in theirs. Ponder must have nodded off, because he was awakened just before 2 a.m. by a scream, and realized he was face down in half of his supper. He pulled a piece of banana-flavored mackerel off his cheek, left Hex quietly clicking through its routine, and followed the noises. The commotion led him to the hall in front of the big doors leading to the library. The bursar was lying on the floor, being fanned with the senior wrangler's hat.
"As far as we can gather, Arch-Chancellor," said the Dean, "the poor chap couldn't sleep and came down for a book."
Ponder looked at the library doors. A big strip of black and yellow tape had been stuck across them, along with a sign saying, "Danger, do not enter in any circumstances." It was now hanging off, and the doors were ajar. This was no surprise. Any true wizard faced with a sign like, "Do not open this door, really, we mean it, we are not kidding, opening this door will mean the end of the universe," would automatically open the door in order to see what all the fuss was about. This made signs rather a waste of time, but at least it meant that when you handed what was left of the wizard to his grieving relatives, you could say, as they grasped the jar, "We told him not to." There was a silence from the darkness on the other side of the doorway. Ridcully extended a finger and pushed one door slightly. Behind it, something made a fluttering noise, and the doors were slammed shut. The wizards jumped back.
"Don't risk it, Arch-Chancellor," said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. "I tried to go in earlier, and the whole section of critical essays had gone critical."
Blue light flickered under the doors. Elsewhere, someone might have said, "It's just books. Books aren't dangerous." But even ordinary books are dangerous, and not only the ones like "Make Jellygnite the Professional Way." A man sits in some museum somewhere and writes a harmless book about political economy, and suddenly thousands of people who haven't even read it are dying because the ones who did haven't got the joke. Knowledge is dangerous, which is why governments often clamp down on people who can think thoughts above a certain caliber.
End of Side 1. Side 2.
And the unseen university library was a magical library built on a very thin patch of space-time. There were books on distant shelves that hadn't been written yet, books that never would be written, at least not here. It had a circumference of a few hundred yards, but there was no known limit to its radius. and in a magical library the books leak and learn from one another. "They've started attacking anyone who goes in," moaned the Dean. "No one can control them when the librarian's not here."
But we're a university. We have to have a library," said Ridcully. "It adds tone. What sort of people would we be if we didn't go into the library?"
"Students," said the senior wrangler morosely.
I remember when I was a student," said the lecturer in recent rooms. "Old bogey boy Swallet took us on an expedition to find the lost reading room. 3 weeks we were wandering around. Had to eat our own boots."
"Did you find it?" said the Dean.
"No, but we found the remains of the previous year's expedition."
"What did you do?"
"We ate their boots, too."
From beyond the door came a flapping, as of leather covers.
"There's some pretty vicious grimoires in there," said the senior wrangler. "They can take a man's arm right off." "Yes, but at least they don't know about door handles," said the Dean. "They do if there's a book in there somewhere called Doorknobs for Beginners," said the senior wrangler. "They read each other."
The Arch-Chancellor glanced at Ponder.
"There likely to be a book like that in there, Stibbons?"
"According to L-space theory, it's practically certain, sir."
As one man, the wizards backed away from the doors.
We can't let this nonsense go on," said Ridcully. "We've got to cure the librarian. It's a magical illness, so we ought to be able to cook up a magical cure, oughtn't we?"
"That would be exceedingly dangerous, Arch-Chancellor," said the Dean. "His whole system is a mess of conflicting magical influences. There's no knowing what adding more magic would do. He's already got a freewheeling temporal gland."
Wizards are certain of the existence of the temporal gland, although not even the most invasive alchemist has ever found where it is located, and current theory is that it has a non-corporeal existence, like a sort of ethereal appendix. It keeps track of how old your body is, and is so susceptible to the influence of a high magical field that it might even work in reverse, absorbing the body's normal supplies of chrononine. The alchemists say it is the key to immortality, but they say that about orange juice, crusty bread, and drinking your own urine. An alchemist would cut his own head off if he thought it'd make him live longer.
"Any more magic, and, well, I don't know what'll happen."
"We'll find out," said Ridcully brusquely. "We need to be able to go into the library. We'd be doing this for the college, Dean. An unseen university is bigger than one man.
Ape.
Thank you. Ape. And we must always remember that I is the smallest letter in the alphabet."
There was another thud from beyond the doors.
"Actually," said the senior wrangler, "I think you'll find that depending on the font, C, or even U, are, in fact, even smaller. Well, shorter, anyway."
"Of course," Ridcully went on, ignoring this as part of the university's usual background logic. "I suppose I could appoint another librarian. Got to be a senior chap who knows his way around. Now let me see. Do any names spring to mind, Dean?"
All right, said the Dean. "Have it your own way, as usual." We can't do it, sir,"
Ponder ventured.
"Oh," said Ridcully. "Volunteering for a bit of bookshelf tidying yourself, are you?"
"I mean, we really can't use magic to change him, sir. There's a huge problem in the way."
"There are no problems, Mr. Stibbons. There are only opportunities."
"Yes, sir, and the opportunity here is to find out the librarian's name."
There was a buzz of agreement from the other wizards.
"The lad's right," said the lecturer in recent rooms. "Can't magic a wizard without knowing his name. Basic rule."
"Well, we call him the librarian," said Ridcully. "Everyone calls him the librarian. Won't that do?"
"That's just a job description, sir."
Ridcully looked at his wizards.
"One of us must know his name, surely? Good grief, I should hope we at least know our colleagues' names. Isn't that so?"
He looked at the Dean.
hesitated, and then said, "Dean?"
"He's been an ape for quite a while, Arch-Chancellor," said the Dean. "Most of his original colleagues have passed on, gone to the great big dinner in the sky. We were going through one of those periods of droit de mortis."
Broadly speaking, the acceleration of a wizard through the ranks of wizardry by killing off more senior wizards. It is a practice currently in abeyance, since a few enthusiastic attempts to remove Mustrum Ridcully resulted in one wizard being unable to hear properly for 2 weeks. Ridcully felt that there was indeed room at the top, and he was occupying all of it.
"Yes, but he's got to be in the records somewhere."
The wizards thought about the great cliffs of stacked paper that constituted the university's records.
"The archivist has never found him," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Who's the archivist?"
"The librarian, Arch-Chancellor."
"Then at least he ought to be in the yearbook for the year he graduated." "It's a very funny thing," said the Dean, "but a freak accident appears to have happened to every single copy of the yearbook for that year."
Ridcully noted his wooden expression.
"Would it be an accident like a particular page being torn out, leaving only a lingering, bananary aroma?"
"Lucky guess, Arch-Chancellor."
Ridcully scratched his chin.
"A pattern emerges," he said.
"You see, he's always been dead set against anyone finding out his name," said the senior wrangler. "He's afraid we'll try to turn him back into a human."
He looked meaningfully at the Dean, who put on an offended expression.
"Some people have been going around saying that an ape as librarian is unsuitable." "I merely express the view that it is against the traditions of the university," the Dean began.
"Which consist largely of niggling, big dinners, and shouting damn fool things about keys in the middle of the night," said Ridcully. "So I don't think we..."
The expressions on the faces of the other wizards made him turn around. The librarian had entered the hall. He walked very slowly because of the amount of clothing he'd put on. The sheer volume of coats and sweaters meant that his arms, instead of being used as extra feet, were sticking out very nearly horizontally on either side of his body. But the most horrifying aspect of the shuffling apparition was the red woolly hat. It was jolly. It had a bobble on it. It had been knitted by Mrs. Whitlow, who was technically an extremely good needlewoman, but if she had a fault, it lay in failing to take account of the precise dimensions of the intended recipient. Several wizards had on occasion been presented with one of her creations, which often assumed they had three ankles, or a neck 2 meters across. Most of the things were surreptitiously given away to charitable institutions. You can say this about Ankh-Morpork. No matter how misshapen a garment, there will always be someone, somewhere, it would fit. Mrs. Whitlow's mistake here was the assumption that the librarian, for whom she had considerable respect, would like a red bobble hat with side flaps that tied under his chin. Given that this would technically require that they be tied under his groin, he'd opted to let them flap loose. He turned a sad face towards the wizards as he stopped outside the library door. He reached for the handle. He said, in a very weak voice, and then sneezed. The pile of clothing settled. When the wizards pulled it away, they found underneath a very large, thick book bound in hairy red leather.
"Says Ook on the cover," said the senior wrangler after a while, in a rather strained voice.
"Does it say who it's by?" said the Dean.
"Bad taste, that man. I meant that maybe it'd be his real name."
"Can we look inside?" said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. "There may be an index."
Any volunteers to look inside the librarian?" said Ridcully. "Don't all shout." "The morphic instability responds to the environment," said Ponder. "Isn't that interesting? He's near the library, so it turns him into a book. Sort of protective camouflage, you could say. It's as if he evolves to fit in with..."
"Thank you, Mr. Stibbons. And is there a point to this?"
"Well, I assume we can look inside," said Ponder. "A book is meant to be opened.
There's even a black leather bookmark, see?
Oh, that's a bookmark, is it? Said the Chair of Indefinite Studies, who had been watching it nervously. Ponder touched the book. It was warm, and it opened easily enough. Every page was covered with ook.
Good dialogue, but the plot is a little dull.
Dean, I'd be obliged if you'd take this seriously, please, said Ridcully. He tapped his foot once or twice. Anyone got any more ideas? The wizards stared at one another and shrugged.
I suppose, said the lecturer in recent runes.
Yes, runes? Arnold, isn't it?
No, Arch-Chancellor.
Well, out with it anyway.
I suppose. I know this sounds ridiculous, but
go on, man, we're almost all agog.
I suppose there's always Rincewind.
Ridcully stared at him for a moment.
Skinny fella, scruffy beard, bloody useless wizard. Got that box on legs thingy?
That's right, Arch-Chancellor. Well done. He was the deputy librarian for a while, as I expect you remember.
Not really, but do go on, he said.
In fact, he was here when the librarian became the librarian, and I remember once when we were watching the librarian stamping four books all at the same time, he said, amazing really when you think he was born in Ankh-Morpork. I'm sure if anyone knows the name of the librarian, it's Rincewind.
Well, go and fetch him then. I suppose you do know where he is, do you?
Technically, yes, Arch-Chancellor, said Ponder quickly, but we're not sure quite where the place where he is, if you follow me.
Ridcully gave him another stare.
You see, we think he's on XXXX, Arch-Chancellor, said Ponder.
XXXX,
Arch-Chancellor.
I thought no one knew where that place was, said Ridcully.
Exactly, Arch-Chancellor, said Ponder.
Sometimes you had to turn facts in several directions until you found the right way to fit them into Ridcully's head. Sometimes Ponder thought his skill with Hex was because Hex was very clever and very stupid at the same time. If you wanted it to understand something, you had to break the idea down into bite-sized pieces and make absolutely sure there was no room for any misunderstanding. The quiet hours with Hex were often a picnic after 5 minutes with the senior wizards.
What's he doing there?
We don't really know, Arch-Chancellor. If you remember, we believe he ended up there after that Agatean business.
What did he want to go there for?
I don't think he actually wanted to, said Ponder. We sent him. It was a trivial error in bilocational thaumaturgy that anyone could make.
But you made it, as I recall, said Ridcully, whose memory could spring nasty surprises like that.
I am a member of the team, sir, said Ponder, pointedly.
Well, if he doesn't want to be there, and we need him here, let's bring him back.
The rest of the sentence was drowned out, not by a noise, but by a sort of bloom of quietness, which rolled over the wizards and was so oppressive and soft that they couldn't even hear their own heartbeats. Old Tom, the university's magical and tongueless bell, tolled out 2 a.m. by striking the silences.
Said Ponder, it's not as simple as that.
Ridcully blinked.
Why not, he said. Bring him back by magic. We sent him there, we can bring him back.
It'd take months to set it up properly if you want him back right here, said Ponder. If we get it wrong, he'll end up arriving in a circle 50 feet wide.
That's not a problem, is it? If we keep out of it, he can land anywhere.
I don't think you quite understand, sir. The signal-to-noise ratio of any thaumic transfer over an uncertain distance, coupled with the disk's own spin, will almost certainly result in a practical averaging of the arriving subject over an area of a couple of 1,000 square feet, at least, sir.
Say again?
Ponder took a deep breath.
I mean, he'll end up arriving as a circle 50 feet wide.
Ah,
So, he probably wouldn't be very good in the library after that, then. Only as a very large bookmark, sir.
All right, then. It's down to sheer geography. Who've we got who knows anything about geography?
The miners emerged from the vertical shaft like ants leaving a burning nest. There were thumps and thuds from below, and at one point Struth's hat shot up into the air, turned over a few times, and dropped back. There was silence for a while, and then bits cracking off it like errant pieces of shell on a newly hatched chick. The thing pulled itself out of the shaft and looked around it. The miners, crouched behind various bushes and sheds, were quite certain of this, even though the monster had no visible eyes. It turned its hundreds of little legs, moving rather stiffly, as if they'd spent too much time buried in the ground. Then, weaving slightly, it set off. And far away in the shimmering red desert, the man in the pointy hat climbed carefully out of his hole. He held in both hands a bowl made of bark. It contained lots of vitamins, valuable protein, and essential fats. See? No mention of wriggling at all. A fire was smouldering a little way away. He put the bowl down carefully and picked up a large stick, stood quietly for a moment, and then suddenly began to hop around the fire, smacking the ground with the stick and shouting, "Ha!" When the ground had been subdued to his apparent satisfaction, he whacked at the bushes as if they had personally offended him, and bashed a couple of trees as well. Finally, he advanced on a couple of flat rocks, lifted up each one in turn, averted his eyes, and shouted, "Ha!" again, and flailed blindly at the ground beneath. The landscape having been acceptably pacified, he sat down to eat his supper before it escaped. It tasted a little like chicken. When you're hungry enough, practically anything can. And eyes watched him from the nearby waterhole. They were not the tiny eyes of the swarming beetles and tadpoles that made a careful examination of every handful he drank a vital gastronomic precaution. These were far older eyes, and currently without any physical component. For weeks, a man whose ability to find water was limited to checking if his feet were wet had survived in this oven-ready country by falling into waterholes. A man who thought of spiders as harmless little creatures had experienced only a couple of nasty shocks when, by now, this approach should have left him with arms the size of beer barrels that glowed in the dark. The man had even hit the seashore once and paddled in a little way to look at the pretty blue jellyfish, and it was all the watcher could do to see that he got a mere light sting which ceased to be agonizing after only a few days. The waterhole bubbled, and the ground trembled, as if, despite the cloudless sky, there was a storm somewhere. Now it was 3 o'clock in the morning. Ridcully was good at doing without other people's sleep. Unseen University was much bigger on the inside. Thousands of years as the leading establishment of practical magic in a world where dimensions were largely a matter of chance in any case, had left it bulging in places where it shouldn't have places. There were rooms containing rooms, which if you entered them, turned out to contain the room you'd started with, which can be a problem if you're in the conga line. And because it was so big, it could afford to have an almost unlimited number of staff on the premises. Tenure was automatic, or more accurately, non-existent. You found an empty room, turned up for meals as usual, and generally no one noticed, although if you were unfortunate, you might attract students. And if you looked hard enough in some of the outlying regions of the university, you could find an expert on anything. You could even find an expert on finding an expert. The professor of recondite architecture and origami map folding had been woken up, been introduced to the Arch-Chancellor, who'd never set eyes on him before, and had produced a map of the university, which would probably be accurate for the next few days, and looked rather like a chrysanthemum in the act of exploding. Finally, the wizards reached a door, and Ridcully glared at the brass plate on it as if it had just been cheeky to him. "The egregious professor of cruel and unusual geography," he said. "This looks like the one." "We must have walked miles," said the dean, leaning against the wall. "I don't recognize any of this." Ridcully glanced around. The walls were stone, but had at some time been painted in that very special institutional green that you get when an almost finished cup of coffee is left standing for a couple of weeks. There was a board covered in balding and darker green felt, on which had been optimistically thumbtacked the word "Notices." but from the looks of it, there had never been any notices and never would be, ever. There was a smell of ancient dinners. Ridcully shrugged and knocked on the door.
"I don't remember him," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"I think I do," said the dean. "Not a very promising boy. Had ears. Don't often see him around, though. Always has a suntan. Odd, that. He's on the staff. If anyone knows anything about geography, he's our man." Ridcully knocked again. "Perhaps he's out," said the dean. "That's where you mostly get geography. Outside." Ridcully pointed to a little wooden device by the door. There was one outside every wizard's study. It consisted of a little sliding panel in a frame. Currently, it was revealing the word in, and presumably was covering the word out, although you could never be sure with some wizards. The lecturer in creative uncertainty, for example, held rather smugly that he was in a state of both inness and outness, until such time as anyone knocked on his door and collapsed the field, and that it was impossible to be categorical before that event. Logic is a wonderful thing, but doesn't always beat actual thought. The dean tried to slide the panel. It refused to budge.
"He must come out sometimes," said the senior wrangler. "Besides, sensible men should be in bed at 3 a.m.
"Yes, indeed," said the dean meaningfully. Ridcully thumped on the door.
I demand that you open up," he shouted. "I am the master of this college."
The door moved under the blow, but not very much. It was blocked by what turned out to be, after some strenuous shoving by all the wizards, an enormous pile of paperwork. The dean picked up a yellowing piece of paper. "This is the memo saying I've been appointed as dean," he said. "That was years ago."
"Surely he must come out sometime," said the senior wrangler. "Oh, dear."
The same thought had occurred to the other wizards, too.
"Remember poor Wally Slubber?"
murmured the chair of indefinite studies, looking around in some trepidation. 3 years of tutorials post-mortem.
"Well, the students did say he was a bit quiet," said Ridcully. He sniffed. "Doesn't smell bad in here. Quite fresh, really. Pleasantly salty. Aha!"
There was a bright light under a door at the other end of the crowded and dusty room, and the wizards could hear a gentle splashing.
"Bath night. Good man," said Ridcully. "Well, we don't have to disturb him."
He peered at the titles of the books that lined the room.
"Bound to be a lot about XXXX somewhere here," he added, pulling out a volume at random. "Come along. One man, one book each."
"Can we at least send out for some breakfast?" grumbled the dean.
"Far too early for breakfast," said Ridcully.
"Well, some supper then."
"Too late for supper."
The chair of indefinite studies took in the rest of the room. A lizard scuttled across the wall and disappeared.
"A bit of a mess in here, isn't there?"
he said, glaring at the place where the lizard had been.
"Everything's very dusty. What's in all these boxes?"
"Says rocks on this side," said the dean. "Makes sense. If you're going to study the outdoors, do it in the warm."
"But what about all the fishing nets and coconuts?"
The dean had to agree the point. The study was a mess, even by the extremely expansive standards of wizardry. Boxes of dusty rocks occupied the little space that wasn't covered with books and paper. They had been variously labelled, with inscriptions like "Rocks from Lower Down," "Other Rocks," "Curious Rocks," and "Probably Not Rocks." Further boxes, to Ponder's rising interest, were marked "Remarkable Bones," "Bones," and "Dull Bones."
"One of those people who pokes his nose where it doesn't belong, I fancy," said the lecturer in recent runes, and sniffed.
He sniffed again, and looked down at the book he'd picked at random.
"This is a pressed squid collection," he said.
"Oh, is it any good? I used to collect starfish when I was a boy," said Ponder.
The lecturer in recent runes shut the book and frowned at him over the top of it.
"I dare say you did, young man. And old fossils, too, I expect."
"I always thought that old fossils might have a lot to teach us," said Ponder. "Perhaps I was wrong," he added darkly.
"Well, I, for one, have never believed all that business about dead animals turning into stone," said the lecturer in recent runes. "It's against all reason. What's in it for them?"
"So how do you explain fossils, then?" said Ponder.
Ah, you see, I don't, said the lecturer in recent runes with a triumphant smile. It saves so much trouble.